Sports Day for Kia.
The all-new Kia Sorento has landed.
And the Bottle-O.
For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
Great to have your company here on Sports Day. Welcome to the program. 7 after 6, 922 118 82 is our number. Richmond and Geelong into the AFL Grand Final. Are you a Cats or Tigers fans? How are you feeling about that? What did you think of the performances on Friday night? Richmond defeating Port by 6 points, pretty intense towards the end. And Brisbane being destroyed pretty much by Geelong by 40. It was probably lucky it wasn't more. Lachie Neale and Brownlow medal. Travis Boak, Christian Petrarca. Did the umpires get it right this year? 922 118 82. We'll have a chat to Courtney Bruce tonight from our West Coast Fever. Sadly, they lost the Super Netball Grand Final to the Vixen 66-64, but what a great Grand Final match it was. And to join me to talk about that and a lot more tonight, in the absence of Paul Hazelby, who's been on a ride today, we'll touch base with him later this hour for Ronald McDonald House, raising some important funds. Good evening to you, Adam.
I'm good. Can we chat to Hayes? Did he make it? Are we sure? I'm looking forward to seeing how he actually went riding from Margaret River to Bunbury.
I don't know. I can't answer that question, mate, but we will find out as we cross down to Hayes, who hopefully has arrived in Bunbury safely.
How does Grand Final week feel for you? It feels different. A little bit different, doesn't it?
I'm sad. You know what's probably the saddest part is that you and I, who, you know, I've done, 20 grand finals, I reckon, on 6PR, aren't going to be doing the game. That's probably the biggest thing. But you know what? I haven't spent a grand final day in Perth for probably 25 years,
yep,
to be honest. The couple of times that I've missed grand finals in the last 25 years, I've been away. At one stage there in 2010, when there was a draw, I ended up in Broome. So I ended up at my mate's house calling off the telly for everyone. I ended up one year calling the grand final. It was the Western Bulldogs' historic win over Sydney. I was calling it off the television live at the bar in Penang, Pap. So whilst I wasn't calling on 882 6PR, there was enough Australians who were able to twist my arm with a bit of beer to get me to call the game and provide some entertainment. Looking forward to it.
Definitely feels a little bit different. I think firstly because the Brownlow medal was on a Sunday night rather than a Monday night, and the count definitely felt different. But congratulations to Lachie Neale. He's had a brilliant season. You know, two really consistent seasons up there at Brisbane after making the move. I know Fremantle fans probably still feeling, and I wonder how they do feel on 9221882, seeing Lachie Neale win a Brownlow medal. You look at it, though, he's probably not going to win a Brownlow, though, playing in the same midfield as Nat Fyfe, is he? Because Fyfe just is such a powerhouse and attracts so many votes himself. So he went to be the man over there at Brisbane, and he's got it done and won a Brownlow medal. So that was fantastic to see from him last night. The Cats and the Tigers into the grand final. I think this is probably the second best of the matchups I was hoping for. I thought it would be great if it was Port and Brisbane playing in the grand final, because we would have seen two teams that hadn't been there for a long time in there, and some new teams with a chance to win the premiership. But Geelong and Richmond, I think, is the next best. The two Victorian teams, the two teams that have really done it the hardest this season, being away for the longest, get to go out at the grand final. I think it's a better matchup than if we'd seen, say, Richmond taking on Brisbane in the grand final, or Port Adelaide playing Geelong. I think we've got the second best of the matchups, and I think as the week goes on, we'll all really start to get into grand final fever, and it'll feel like we're building up to that big game.
If you'd like to give us a slap and a sledge for Sullivan Logistics, 3 votes for storage and overnight freight, they never say no. Call through now, 922 118 82. It was a wide and diverse, busy weekend in sport. We would certainly have to give a slap to Shane Van Gisbergen and Garth Tander, who will join us out of the 7 o'clock news tonight for their big win at the Bathurst 1000. Very entertaining. The last is the Holden Racing Team. I'm also going to give a slap to the bloke that won the WA Golf Championship, an amateur, Hayden Hopewell, who'll join us after 7 o'clock tonight. A great victory by him. He's only 18 years of age. And Alex Rins in MotoGP. You and I, perhaps, just had a chance to relive the last couple of laps as he became the 8th winner of the MotoGP Championship this year, the first for Suzuki in 2020. And he beat rookie Alex Marquez, who has finished on the podium in the last couple of events. So a slap on the back for him.
You've got to be insane to do that sort of a thing. A slap to the West Coast Fever for the performance yesterday in the Super Netball Grand Final. It wasn't to be again, unfortunately, another Grand Final loss, but they acquitted themselves so well and so easily could have won it towards the end. I guess my sledge tonight is probably going back to the Brownlow medal last night. I know the tradition is to get the previous winner to actually present the medal to the next winner, but having Lachie Neal actually having to present the medal to himself, picking it up off a mannequin last night, was just a bit of a joke, really. They could have found a better way to do that. Surely they could have got someone that was in the room there in Brisbane to present it to Lachie Neal, either Chris Fagan or perhaps Simon Black, who is a Brownlow medalist in the room too.
922-1882 is our number, and just while we're having a chat here tonight, I would love to hear from you, because Will Schofield is going to join us in advance of the West Coast Eagles Fairest and Best shortly. A slap to classic legend and Kieran McAvoy, who won the Everest, Australia's richest horse race, worth $15 million there at Randwick. A slap for Very Elegant and Mark Zara, won the Caulfield Cup. I thought that that was a huge victory. And sadly, WA's Tommy Shelby ran third, still a great effort, at Wentworth Park in the final of the $1 million chase. So didn't quite get $50,000 into the coffers for Telethon, but certainly a good opportunity there. And just updating you in the Sheffield Shield, Cam Gannon will join us after the day's play. New South Wales, after being 3 for 71, 3 for 262 at stumps against WA. Enrique's 134 not out. Solway 68 not out. And in the other game, must have been a bit of a minefield there. South Australia 195 all out. Tasmania in reply a 2 for 14. So that is just updating some of the other sport. We need to clear a commitment in a moment and get to Will Schofield. But first, perhaps the West Coast Eagles fairest and best tonight. Who wins?
I've been tossing up on this one all day. I think they're normally rewarded on consistency, and I was so surprised that Nick Natanui didn't get more votes than he did last night in the Brownlow medal. I thought the umpires got that one wrong, with Tim Kelly and Dom Shee getting more votes than Nick Natanui, because clearly his season was better and his impact on games was much better than those midfielders, but they tend to get ignored, don't they? The key position players or the ruckman. So Nick Natanui, I think, is going to be the clear favourite. Can Brad Shepherd, with his remarkable consistency, pip him at the post? I'm not sure. I'd like to see Shepherd win it. I think he can after two pretty consistent seasons, but Nick Natanui is definitely going to be up there.
All right. I think Nick Natanui will win. I'd expect that Liam Ryan will be about the place. Andrew Gaff, who won it in 2015, and you'd think the best of the defenders would be Brad Shepherd, but for me, it's going to be Nick Natanui. I'd love to hear from you listeners on who you think is going to win the West Coast Eagles fairest and best tonight. And while we're on the West Coast Eagles, proudly supported by 882 6BA, you would have heard it advertised. There's only 10 tickets left to the grand final lunch with JK, Nick Nat and the Gov. I am going to be putting these blokes through their paces. So I'm the interviewer of the three sensational guests that we've got. And it is due to COVID-19 and the restrictions that they've had. There's certainly going to be so much intrigue. It's on Friday, prior to the AFL Grand Final at the Hyatt Regency, 12:30 for a 1 o'clock start. There is only 10 tickets left. So if you would like a ticket for that, please make sure that you do either contact the Hyatts, or if you get hold of T14 Events and get hold of yourself of a ticket to come along for the last 10 and have a special lunch with us. Let's clear a commitment on the other side. It's 6:15. We'll have a chat to Will Schofield from the West Coast Eagles. Welcome back to Sports Day, and joining us is Will Schofield from the West Coast Eagles, ahead of the fairest and best count, which is going to be conducted tonight. Welcome, Will. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Hello, guys. How are we?
Yeah, we're going really well, mate. Haven't spoken to you since you pulled the pin and then the team lost and probably didn't go out the way that you would have liked.
No, you should have got me on earlier so we could have got selected for that last game, but that's okay. we'll forget that. all done and dusted, and really no regrets. I've had a lot of reflection time over the last couple of weeks or so, or even longer, and I don't have any regrets. There's obviously things you would like to go better, but you can't take things back, so we move on. It's all good.
Now, well done on your career, mate. You have been outstanding, and that game that you played in 2018, I will never forget, mate. It was absolutely awesome, and to sit there broadcasting that match and for you to have the impact that you did and being brought in from the cold, basically, was absolutely awesome, mate. And you should be very proud of what you have achieved for the football club, and you will continue, I'm sure, to work in some way, shape or form in the game, because it's in your blood. What about tonight? I mean, what's tonight going to be like, given that it will be your last as a player?
I don't think that, you know, the last best and fairest is, you know, too much of a big deal. Like, you know, best and fairest is what it is. It's always good to get together, but we spend a lot of time together during the year, so I'm certainly never mentioned in the vote, so it doesn't really mean a lot to me. but, you know, yeah, it'll be good to be able to, you know, hopefully get to say a few words. I've obviously spoken to the playing group already. I did that pre-finals, but just, you know, be able to thank some people publicly. You know, it's been a weird year. We haven't been able to get together as a group a lot in terms of partners and families. So I think overall, you know, speaking to my wife, Alex, she's excited just to get amongst everyone and just see everyone properly. And yeah, it'll be good to be able to say our goodbyes, but you know, we're not dead. We're just retiring from footy. So we'll be around and we'll be able to speak to people. But I think that'll be the great thing is we're very lucky over here in WA. We can still gather in groups and be able to get together as a team and do the best and fairest, you know, kind of properly. So it'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the other clubs have had to just do virtual ones and just put the votes out and announce the winners that way. So it is good that you can all get together and celebrate tonight. What have the last couple of weeks been, I guess, both for the team with everyone in quarantine, but for yourself as well, Will, as you look to the future?
Yeah, we had a bit of a weird finish to the year when finals finished up. We had a 7-day house isolated lockdown, which was very different to any finish to the season I've ever experienced. Usually get quite a few beers in that first week. So we were stuck in our house there for a bit, which, you know, like I said, the rest of the country's had to do that for a lot longer than us. So we went ahead and did that. And then, you know, I guess sort of information starting to follow, you know, float through about how next season's going to look. Very quickly in AFL circles, teams move to next year. So I'm sure as soon as the final siren sounded, not too long after that, West Coast would have been positioning themselves for what next year looks like. And, you know, for the players, it's when do we come back? But, you know, for the team, it's trade period and the drafts after that. So it moves very quickly. You know, Schofield out the door, they'll have to get someone pretty big in to fill those shoes, I would have thought.
Well, they will, and they'll need a new West Coast Eagles players advocate. Do you know how much the list is going to be reduced? Have you had that confirmed to you as a playing group, given that, you know, that's another role that you will relinquish that someone is going to have to fill?
Yeah, I think it's been pretty well reported. I don't think it's going to be a drastic drop in numbers, but I think there will be a drop in numbers. You know, it's sounding like the players that have had to sort of sacrifice this year are going to be, you know, hopefully looked after in a sense that not too many of them are going to lose their position on a list just because the game's reducing in, you know, total money into it. But there will be a reduce in list sizes for sure. And there's going to be a lot of changes. I think, you know, you can look at it negatively and the way the game's been affected financially and, you know, overall. But you can probably look at it from an opportunity base as well, that it provides a, you know, pretty good turning point in the game. If you want to change things, you can probably change them now without not a lot of questions. So I think there will be a lot of changes. You know, list sizes is one of them, but, you know, game rules, you know, the way club life looks in terms of how training sessions are put together and how long players are staying at the club. And I think a lot of people have learned a lot of things over the last 12 months, and hopefully, you know, if you take a positive look at it, it'll be good for the game.
There's certainly going to be a lot of changes, a lot of player movement happening as well. Will, just wanted to get your thoughts. We've been talking on the show already so far about free agency. Obviously, off the back of the news today that Jeremy Cameron's leaving the Giants, wants to go to the Cats, who could be the potential premier. Have you got any thoughts on how free agency has changed the game? And is it right that a player, you know, one of the best players in the comp can go to the strongest team?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, you never like to see teams stay down the bottom for too long. I mean, if you look from an equality point of the game, you want to see, you know, most teams have a chance most years, but there is going to be the better teams. And, you know, reality is if free agency stays as it is or if it is increased, you know, if players are able to move in directions that they haven't even been able to before, which I think will be another big change coming up. You'll potentially see guys signed to short-term in-season deals out of the waffle, out of the VFL, with these list sizes that are coming in. I can see that definitely happening. And the more that player movement happens, you know, as you see it in other leagues, in other sports, the better teams are going to, they're going to be able to sign the best players. You know, look at NBA, you look at NFL, even EPL, even though they don't follow similar structures to us, you know, it's still elite sports. The better teams are going to be able to sign the better players. And, you know, you can either look at it, well, you know, poor clubs that can't sign them, well, bad luck, or, yeah, that's the other way to look at it, you know, tough titties a little bit and, you know, move on and make your club better and start getting some success and you'll be able to sign better players. So, you know, the specifics of the Cameron deal, don't know how that's going to go down. Geelong, remarkably, have been a big player in the free agent pool over the last couple of years while still maintaining a high degree of success. You know, they're going to play in a grand final, yet they're linked to Cameron, Crouch from Adelaide, and someone else big I'm missing.
Higgins. Yeah.
Yeah, Higgins, right? So they're going to get better and better. But I probably would finish on, it's not who's on your list that wins your premierships. Richmond don't have the best list. I'd be happy to say that. But they're coming around for their fourth grand final. So, you know, going to go around for their third premiership in 4 years. They're going to have a crack at it. And they wouldn't have the best list. I don't think you could argue with that. So you can get as many good players as you like, but if you don't have good culture, good buy-in at the footy club, then you're not going to go very far.
Well said. Before we get your predictions for tonight and the best and fairest count, just your immediate future. Are you looking to play footy next year? Will we see you running around in the waffle?
Yeah, body feels good. I pretty much, you know, almost skipped a season of footy there. I only played 4 games at AFL level, and then scrimmage was, you know, very reduced minutes and pretty much a training session. So body feels good. You know, I've stepped away from the elite level, you know, as it's been reported, and I'm happy to say that, you know, just mentally the fight to, you know, keep pushing your case at, you know, selection at senior level just came, you know, finished up with me, and I sort of didn't have too much else to give there. But yeah, I'll go around and play waffle, hopefully, and we'll just see how we go. Might win a Sandover. Who knows?
Who are you playing for? Who are you playing for, mate?
I haven't signed with anyone yet, Carl. I'm still contracted for a little while with the AFL team. So once that finishes up, I'll look to sign with someone.
All right. Now, being an old Geelong boy, will you be going for Geelong in the grand final or not?
Yeah, look, I'll be going for Geelong. Probably a few personal contacts in there. I played in my first premiership win with Lockie Henderson back in Geelong College in 2006. So I'll be back in Hendo in to get the job done, and be great to see him win a flag towards the back end of his career.
Yeah, there's a few Geelong Falcons boys that have come through that system and gone on to do big things in the AFL as well. So it's a very good production line down there, mate. And who wins tonight?
Yeah, just discussing that with Gov. And
it's
we think.
Quiet.
Yeah, no, nah, we've stuffed a beer in his face. He'll be right. we think Nick Nat could be quite a big winner. That's our thoughts.
Yeah, that's what
I'd say Liam Ryan top three though. He's had a very very good year, and I'd love to see a backman into there somewhere. That'd be nice.
Well, we thought that Brad Shepherd, Paps and I might be up there. We spoke about that off the top of our program, and I don't think that we can extinguish the chances of Andrew Gaff either, can we, mate? He's run further than anyone in the competition. He's regularly getting the footy, and I know that he's very well respected within your group.
And he's a midfielder.
He is. Correct. Good on you, mate.
That just gives you a few extra points just for rocking up.
Go and stuff a beer in your own throat and enjoy the night. Thanks for chatting to us pre-event.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks, Paps.
Good on you. Will Schofield. He is a nice bloke, and, he's just reiterated what I said off the top about Nick Nat Nui winning the award tonight. Nice to have your company here on Sports Day. We'll be back with your calls after this. Who do you think's going to win? 9-22-11-882 is...
Sports Day for Kia.
Your new Kia Sorento has landed, and the Bottle-O. For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
listeners, 922-1882, slaps and sledges for Sullivan Logistics, your trusted storage and overnight freight expert. Sullivan Logistics in it for the long haul. I'm going to have a bit of a sledge at Wallabies, who lost 27-7 at Eden Park to the All Blacks. Missed tackles, turnover balls certainly cost them on the weekend. They weren't anywhere near as slick as what I thought they were in the first clash of the Bledisloe Cup. We've got to get to the dig too in this little seggy, so if you want to have a dig at something, 922-1882 is the number. But we go to Ronnie in Spearwood, who joins us. G'day, Ronnie. G'day, Ronnie. No, Ronnie's
yes.
not there.
Let's... Can you
hello, Ronnie. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, Carl. Adam, can I put a question to you, please?
Yeah.
Yep. 13 months ago, Fife won the Brownlow Medal. Who was in the front page of the West Australian?
Oh, no idea. Who was?
Rioli.
Right.
Okay, question two. Who won the Brownlow last night? Lucky Neil. Who was on the front paper?
On the front page of today's paper?
Nick Nat.
Nick Nat. What the hell's going on?
Well...
You know, the West Australian, Channel 7, it's all crap.
Well, it's WA, mate, isn't it? It's WA, though.
No, but the Brownlow Medal, for God's sake, you know, something's not right there.
But it was at the back of the paper.
No, but I'm talking about the front. Same thing happened last year.
Yeah, but as I said, I mean, they want to keep it local, don't they, on WA? Then they'll have a WA focus always. That's why.
I think circumstances last year, of course, it was a very big news story at the time. Still is.
But no, I don't think that has any... I think that it's always going to remain a West Australian focus. Whilst the winner, if it's Chris Judd or if it's Simon Black, who was a West Australian, I don't know necessarily that they will be on the front page. But okay, Ronnie, no worries. You're having a dig or a sledge. And don't worry, sledge or a dig at the newspaper. That's fine. Thanks, Ronnie. Les in Rockingham, how are you, Les?
Hiya, Carl. a couple of comments. First, an easy one, then the second one. The first one, I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. When are we going to see the AFL or the umpires crap down on throwing the ball? I saw the best netball pass ever seen by Dangerfield the other night, one-handed, and the ump's about 20 feet away. And the second one is, and I always value your comments because your comments, Carl, are like you used to play footy. Rhino's story about the young guy from Collingwood, Degore. Why is he being allowed to play or has been playing when he's been charged with a serious offence, allegedly? So Rioli, who only peed in a bottle, allegedly, has nothing's been done about the case for what, 13 months, Carl?
He didn't pee in the bottle, mate. That's the problem.
No.
He actually spat in the bottle. And now that's allegedly, okay? And that's the reason why, because he tampered with a drug sample. Now, that's more serious than actually testing positive to marijuana, which is what he tested positive for, Les. Now, if he had have just tested positive for marijuana without tampering with a drug sample, Les, is a four-year offence, Les. 4 years. Under the WADA, so that's the World Drug Agency, and also of which we're a part, and the AFL have signed up to it, that's USADA here in Australia. So that's why it's taken so long, is there's a lot of legal argument that goes along to get to this point, and hopefully we'll get an outcome from that in the not-too-distant future. Les, I've always been of the opinion, and I've broadcast that here on this program, that Willie Rioli was always going to get 2 years. It's as to whether he gets four and it finishes his football career. And I think that's what will now transpire in the upcoming hearing that he is going to front personally in Melbourne in the not-too-distant future.
You can't compare, I don't think, the two cases because they're completely different things. There's been a fair bit of a debate about Jordan Ngoi and whether he should or shouldn't be playing and whether the AFL should bring in a policy similar to what the NRL do, where if a player is accused of a certain offence, they can be provisionally suspended as well. And that may be something the AFL look at in the future, but under the current rules, it's not necessarily the case.
I would, Les, personally, I would love to see a situation where innocent until proven guilty, to be perfectly honest. That's what I'd like to see. So both in the Rioli and the Dugowie case, whilst they are vastly different, I think that the innocence and that should be always part of the platform. And in Rioli's case, what is unacceptable, Les, is that it has taken so long to get to actually having the hearing. That part in world sport, which doesn't just apply to this Rioli case, has applied to many, many others that have gone before him. So it's something, mate, that they need to try and expedite, from my opinion, as quickly as possible.
As you suggested, Carl, there's been a fair bit of negotiations going on behind the scenes to get to the point where they can actually have a hearing.
Yes. 9222982, if you'd like to join us. Daryl's in Kingsley. G'day.
Good evening, lads. I've got my slaps and sledge. My slap has to go to the Melbourne Storm for making another grand final, and considering what they've had to do with their own hub situation, it's an outstanding effort. For my sledges, I have to go first to the AFL umpires on how they could have Max Gawn outpoll Nick Natanui in the Brownlow medal night last night. And the other one is to the AFL for deciding to bring grass from the MCG up to the Gabba, when they could have easily used that money to fly Nat Fife for one of the Brownlow winners over to present for Lachie Neal.
Good call. Maybe not the second part of that. I don't think they needed to fly Nat Fife over there because he'd have to quarantine for 2 weeks when he came back home again. So he might not have wanted to do that. I'm sure they could have found someone else in the room. Agree with you on the grass. I know what's been said, that it's been paid for by a sponsor for that to move, but I think everybody else that doesn't live in Victoria understands that it's just a terrible look. It's supposed to be a national game. We don't have to have the MCG as part of the Gabba on the weekend. As it turns out, there's going to be two Victorian teams there anyway, so that they should be happy enough with that. The movement of the goal square was just ridiculous.
Just while you're on, Daryl, your NRL stuff, Cleary's been served a two-game ban for that TikTok fiasco, and Jack Whiten has just won the Daily M medal.
I agree with the Jack Whiten awarding of the Daily M. I thought he was one of the outstanding players. It was either him or Tedesco from the Sydney Roosters. And we haven't even reached the off-season yet. There's always issues with TikToking and out of competition stuff that's happened with the NRL players. When will they ever learn?
No, very, very good question, mate. Thank you, Daryl. Thanks for getting involved. 9221882 is our number. Robin Como. G'day, Rob.
Hey, Carl, how are you, mate?
I'll
take your comments on board, even though you were Eagles before, but with that Nigel Sadley, I agreed with Ron before, the last caller, a few calls ago, but with the newspaper, he's right, exactly what he said, but with that Nigel Sadley, he put a whole page about the grand final should be here and stuff, because he's probably betting that Eagles were going to be in the grand final. Do you reckon any of those, the West Australian or Channel 7, would have done that if it was Dockers in there and not Eagles?
Oh, yeah. Nigel Sadley's got some business clout in the market. There's no doubt about that, Rob. But I think that and so is Dale Alcock, who fronts as the chairman for the Freo Dockers. From my perspective, mate, the grand final should be played here. The reason why it's not being played here, and why we don't have a lot of other elite sport being played here, is, as I wrote in the Sunday Times yesterday, mate, because our state government isn't allowing that to happen. Now, the next sport that's going to be played at Optus Stadium, as it stands right now, there is nothing booked in until football season. Now, at this stage, football season is not even booked in there either. So when is the next sporting event going to be played at a venue that we built, which is the best in the country and is basically going to lay dormant for events for the whole of our Australian summer? It is just an absolute joke, from my perspective, that we are in this scenario, given that we have no COVID-19. I think that we could establish some very negotiable testing regimes that could allow that to take place. So there you go. If you want to have a sledge, well, I'm giving one again right there. And look, I sledged the Claremont Football Club as well and their hierarchy for getting rid of their coach. Look, I think that to balance that up, I think there's two sides to every story. And I think, look, the Claremont Football Club, Brian Beresford, Grant Povey, Tony Evans, who's a really good mate of mine, these blokes aren't mugs. I think they have been of the view that their club can do better, and I think that they were hoping very strongly that they won the grand final. And that either way, whether the grand final was a winning grand final or a losing grand final, I think that Darren Harris also knew what his fate was going to be. So, for those guys, they've made a courageous decision. Now what will be equally important is the person that they employ. But the person that they employ is going to be under a fair bit of pressure. So just want to make that very clear tonight that whilst out of crack, there is two sides to every story. There was some benchmarks that are set. And if you don't achieve benchmarks in anything that you do in life, then sadly, that doesn't guarantee that you will be re-employed in that role into the future. It's 6:45. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. More of your calls. And I know that Paps has been itching to give his dig. He's going to have a crack at Jeremy Cameron, everyone. Dial before you dig, the first essential step. We'll get that next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia.
The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And the Bottle-O. For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
Great to have your company, 922-982. Now we're going to be heading down to Bunbury shortly, having a chat to Paul Hazelby before the 7 o'clock news. After 7, we will be joined by Cam Gannon. We'll also have a chat to Garth Tander, Courtney Bruce and Hayden Hopewell, who have all starred and played really good roles throughout the weekend. And for Courtney's case, even though they lost, it was a great grand final played against the Melbourne Vixens, the Vixens reigning supreme. To Mike in Kingsley, g'day Mike.
Yeah, g'day mate. Look, I don't normally ring up about football shows because I'm not really into football that much unless the Eagles are playing. But this grass situation up at the Gabba, a slap and a sledge all together. The sledge has got to be to the idiotic sponsor that thinks he's going to get mileage out of it. And the slap on the back has got to be to the media. Because in all this talk and conversation that's gone on about this, I don't even know who the sponsor is. And that's good. I don't want to know. They're not being given any mileage at all, which is, I think, the media are doing a good job of that. They're saying, well, you know, we'll talk about it, but we're not going to name the company. I think that's great. And as for the broadcasting rights on the game, I hope they don't focus on that particular sponsor's name at all throughout the game. I think the sponsor needs to have the biggest slap in the proverbial you know where. For wasting their money in digging up a piece of the MCG and carting it up the top end of Australia. What are they going to do? Are they going to dig it up, by the way, and take it back to the MCG after the grand final? No one's ever mentioned that, have they?
That is true. Very good call. Well, I do know the sponsor, but I won't mention it just for your sake. It is a bit ridiculous, really, the whole publicity stunt to take a piece of the MCG up to the Gabba. And I can guarantee you, though, that I reckon there will be a huge focus on that piece of grass come Saturday in the broadcast, especially because the Tigers, of course, their home ground is the MCG, and they'll be playing there and trying to win their third premiership in 4 years.
Righto. Now, you had a little bit of a slap at that as well earlier. One thing that I know that you want to get off your chest for Dial Before You Dig, the first essential step, don't dig yourself into a whole lodge of free Dial Before You Dig inquiries, you want to have a crack about the Jeremy Cameron scenario. Now, Jeremy Cameron, for everyone who maybe has just joined us, has decided to leave the Greater Western Sydney Giants, and he has reportedly, in fact we know, he's asked to be traded to Geelong.
It doesn't sit well with me, Carl. And I've spoken about this, about free agency on this program, even as recently as the last couple of weeks. Jeremy Cameron goes from the Giants, who were in the grand final last year, didn't have the season that they wanted to this season, clearly, but can pick up, walk out the door, and go to the team that potentially wins the premiership this year. It's not dissimilar to what Tom Lynch did going from the Gold Coast Suns a couple of seasons ago, the worst team in the competition, but as a free agent was able to go and sign with the Richmond Footy Club, and lo and behold, they win a premiership the very next year and are playing in another grand final this year after recruiting the best forward in the competition. It just doesn't sit right with me, Carl, as a footy fan, watching everything that the AFL does in terms of equalisation around the league with the way they draft, with their academies, with the way they've topped up clubs in the past, with extra salary cap incentives and that sort of thing. The fact that under free agency, the best player in the competition or one of the best players in the competition can pick up and move from, in this case, a middle-tier club this season, as in Tom Lynch's case, the worst team in the competition, just pick up, leave, and go to the club that is in the prime position, in the best club in the competition. Now, I'm not blaming Jeremy Cameron here, because it's not his fault that this is what the rules are. He's either going for lifestyle reasons to go down into Geelong. He's either going for money, which he could probably get just as much at the GWS Giants, or he's going for success, which is what the Cats can certainly offer with the list that they've got at the moment, the fact that they're competing for a premiership.
Well, I'm going to have a dig at the Golf Australia group. Australia's major golf events cancelled. PGA Championship, Australian Open, Women's Australian Open. They're all due to be played in February. They won't proceed due to the global pandemic. I'll be interested to hear what Hayden Hopewell's scenario and view on this is in the next hour, perhaps. But for me, I think it stinks. I think that we still could have played those major tournaments in this country with the best players, both male and female, in this country. And the reason why it won't proceed is due to the global pandemic and the number of people that won't be here. Paul Hasby next.
Righto, just before we get to the 882, 6PR, 7 o'clock news, the ride for sick kids is underway for Ronald McDonald House Charities here in Western Australia. And the reason why Paul Hazelby is not working with me tonight is because he has been riding today, and we're going to find out whether he's alive. Are you there, Hayes?
I should have stayed with you, Carl. That would have been a better idea. It was a tough day, I must admit. I didn't know what to expect going in, and we started in Margaret River, and as you know, Margaret River, you go down a hill to start off. I thought, this isn't too bad. The pace was pretty slow. And then the hills came at Margaret River. About the 10-minute mark, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to get here. But then I had a great stretch, 30 kilometres, the second one after we took a break. And we were just part of the peloton. We were flying. I was going, this is easy. And then late, well, didn't I hit a brick wall. I had cramp in my right quad. Then it went to my left quad, then my left hamstring. And I did lose touch a few times with the peloton. But we've got some pro riders here. And they were able to push me through. But I learned a lesson today. You got to pay the price. And I didn't pay the price. I didn't do the work. And I came unstuck.
So you're cramping in one leg. How are you feeling now that you've made it to Bunbury?
Well, all the boys, you know, they got around and had a few beers after. I had to go take some time out just to get through. I think I did it the toughest, to be honest. And I hadn't done the work. So I'm going to do it again next year. I'm backing up. But I'm going to do the full 4 days next year. And I'm going to put the work in. I'm going to buy a new bike too, because I think maybe, just maybe, it could have been the 12-year-old bike that also contributed to my poor performance.
You could have pinched Eamon Haydar's bike, mate. I think it's carbon fibre. It's worth about $52,000. So, but you can still donate, mate. And for those that are tuned in tonight, rmhc.org.au, there is plenty of great people that are involved in this ride. And we had a chat to a couple of them on the program, Hayes. So it's a wonderful event.
Yeah, get involved. Some great stories, and to ride alongside some people and families that have been involved and had kids at Ronald McDonald House was quite special. So can't wait to do it again next year. But if you can donate, go to our social, Sports Day, and also Paul Hosby Twitter. I think I've got all the required elements there. So it was great, guys.
Good to see you catch the cycling bug. Hayes, how many Ks did you actually ride in the end?
Oh, it was like 134. I think in the end, and we're coming into Bunbury, and it said only 15 left, and then they're telling me there was still 24 because we went the inland route, and I was hurting by that time, perhaps. I wasn't too happy with it, but it is a long way. I saw a fair bit of the coast and a fair bit of the great region in the first half, not so much in the second half. Head was down, bum was up, working hard, just to stay in touch with the peloton.
Now, we just had Will Schofield on the program. I said off the top of the program that I thought that Nick Natanui would win. He pretty much said the same. Who do you think wins the West Coast Eagles fairest and best tonight as we let you go?
I'm going to go with Andrew Gaff to win.
All right. Well, take care, and we'll see you back on the program tomorrow.
Thanks, boys. Can't wait.
And the news is next here on 6PR. We'll be back after 7, and we will be joined by Cameron Gannon, who has toiled away in the field in the Sheffield Shield match, WA against New South Wales. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company here for the second hour of the program, and we head across to South Australia, and Cameron Gannon, who spent all day in the field, joins us here after the Sheffield Shield Day 1's play. Welcome, Cam. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good, thanks.
Nice to have your company, mate. Ended up being a pretty tough day. 21 overs for yourself, 1 for 63. You were looking pretty good, you blokes, when you had them at 3 for 71 after they got off to a reasonable start. But things went south from there. New South Wales ending at stumps, 3 for 262. And Henriques and Solway, you couldn't get them out.
Yeah, they batted pretty well. They they showed a lot of discipline. And it's a pretty placid wicket, so they didn't really give us much. So for us, it just becomes about being as disciplined as we can and trying to limit what they can do and get ourselves back in the game a little bit. I mean, to be fair, they've only scored 260-odd runs today, so there's still a long way to go on the fixture. So I think we're actually in a relatively decent position, considering we've only taken 3 wickets.
Yeah, frustrating, obviously, given you were able to take some quick ones before Enriquez in particular, able to score that century. But your thoughts on, obviously, Shaun Marsh won the toss, elected to bowl. What was the thinking behind that decision, and how's that played out during the day in terms of the pitch?
Yeah, look, I think we all kind of had the opinion that we didn't really care what we did. Looking at the wicket 2 days ago, it was really soft. And since then, the ground staff have just, you know, they've done a good job getting it up and ready for Shield cricket. So I think looking at it, it's quite green. We thought there might be a little bit in it. And we just may not have used the new ball as well as we'd like. So on the back of that, the wickets are allowed to flatten out and they're allowed to bat well. It's just up to us to try and counter that as best we can.
10 years at Queensland, mate. How are you enjoying your time, even though it's weird? You're playing cricket over there in South Australia. You're playing home games away from home. How have you been coping?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, you know, you come to Western Australia, you expect to play on the WACA, and then, you know, the world gets turned on its ear, and all of a sudden you're playing 4 games in South Australia. So it is. Like you said, it's a weird circumstance, but it's been a whole lot of fun so far, actually. Obviously, I'd love to be with my family and, like, Leah, my wife, she's giving me plenty of updates there. She's sending lots of videos and photos and stuff, so I still feel like I'm around, so that's good. But, yeah, it's to be fair, it actually probably helps the recovery a little bit because you've got so much... Like, you've got nothing better to do, so you focus on recovering well for the next day or the next game. So there's actually some real positives to it.
Yeah, I don't reckon it'd be the same, though, bowling over there in South Australia. It's a big 6'6", right-arm fast bowler, mate. To be bowling on those decks over there in South Australia, you've got to work bloody hard. Speaking of working bloody hard, how impressed have you been by Liam Guthrie, mate? A bloke who has shown that he can bowl with pretty good pace.
Look, I said, I don't know who I was on the phone to or who I was interviewed by when I first got here. But Liam's impressed me from afar over the last couple of years in the second round of games that I've played against him. And I think I've kind of thought that he's a really good talent, and it's really nice that he's come out and he's had a really good day today. I mean, he got 1 wicket, and it was a really nice piece of bowling. But he just kept coming all day. He's got a great little engine, and he keeps coming, and he bowled with really good pace today, like you said. So I'm not surprised by it. I'm just really glad that he's doing it for us in the first team. He got an opportunity this game, and I think he's so far done really well with it.
You mentioned, Carl was mentioning to you how tough it was to be bowling there in South Australia. You're keeping an eye on the other match as well. There's plenty of wickets in that one. South Australia allowed for 195 and Tassie 2 for 14. That can't have been too far away from where you guys are playing.
it feels like a world away. But it also, I think they've tried to juice that wicket up a little bit after the last game. So it definitely seems like there's a lot more happening over there. But who knows, maybe our game will speed up as we go along. There's still 3 days left, so we can still get a result out of this and potentially a favourable one. We just need to keep turning up and keep doing our best.
Another big fast bowler I'd like to get your opinion on is Lance Morris, mate. He was stopping the gun in the 140s the other day. 140s?
Yeah, 149. 149. He bowled absolute rockets, and I was standing in gully hoping it didn't come to me. It was absolutely ridiculous how fast he was bowling, and I think he's actually a really good talent. I think the Stars did a really good job signing him. They kind of got it, they bought him low last year, I think. He's made a whole lot of progress this preseason. Not just, you know, bowling thunderbolts is great, but he actually has that natural aggression and an even head, an even temper. So I think that's a real asset for him. And also, like, you see a lot of guys that bowl that fast can't necessarily hit the stumps, but he could do that. So I would say Lance has probably been the person who's impressed me the most with his cricket.
Did he have an injury? Is that why he didn't play in this one?
Yeah, he's got a... I'm not too sure on the details, but he's got a little niggle that they've decided to just not risk and keep him out of this game, and then we'll play him again, hopefully, next game. It all depends on how it progresses.
Good stuff, mate. Well, thank you very much for joining us after today's play, and relax, rest up, and we'll see you in action tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Good on you. Cam Gannon joining us from our West Australian cricket team, just repeating the news in the Sheffield Shield. If you've just joined us, New South Wales at stumps, 3 for 262, and WA had them 3 for early. We'll take a break. Garth Tanner will join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day. Giant performance of the day yesterday for Giant Bicycles. We're Still Riding With You was at the Bathurst 1000. It was great to see him in the car, behind the wheel, working with his teammate Shane Van Gisbergen. And what was an historic day too, given that it was the last time that we'll see Holden competing in supercars. A bloke that's been with Holden for the whole of his racing career is Garth Tander, and I'm delighted to have him on the program with us tonight. Welcome, Garth. Thanks for your time, mate. Well done.
Cheers, Carl. Yeah, like you said, it was a very special day. And obviously, any time you stand on the podium at Bathurst is a good day. And to have a win was an amazing feeling. And like you said, a very special day, given it's Holden's last official involvement in motorsport in Australia at Bathurst, given that they're ceasing operations at the end of the year. So it was a lot of motivation to try and stand on the top step at Bathurst for the Holden fans. And, it was pretty surreal when we achieved that.
Mate, given that you're only driving part-time in endurance races and being a co-driver, how have you been keeping your eye in, so to speak?
Well, I haven't been able to at all. There's been basically no other racing in Australia other than supercars. And so, obviously, all the regular full-time guys are doing the championship. So that leaves all the co-drivers effectively sitting on the couch for the last 6 months while the country's been in lockdown. So, last time I drove a race car was Thursday afternoon at the Australian Grand Prix at the beginning of March. And the last time I drove the Red Bull Holden was in February at the pre-season test. So, yeah, there was no driving, but I was clearly in a very fortunate position that it was my 22nd Bathurst on the weekend, so I've done a few laps around the mountain. So I was pretty comfortable heading into the weekend that once I got back in the car and got back in the groove again, it'd be like riding a bike, it'd all come back to you, and I was fortunate that's how it played out.
Like a duck to water, eh? So you didn't play the online games like a few of the others did, Scotty McLaughlin and so on?
I did a little bit of that, particularly in the early part of lockdown and when the majority of the country was shut down. But to be honest, mate, I'm obviously too old for that stuff now because it just doesn't interest me at all. I did it for a bit, but yeah, I wasn't really all that motivated to keep doing it and practice the amount that you need to practice. And I sort of started finding out that I was driving the simulator like the real race car, and the trick to driving a simulator is that you have to drive it a particular way, and I didn't want to get caught up driving, like learning to drive the simulator way and feeling too far away from my real world racing experience. So, yeah, I packed that in after a month or so.
Well, you've made the right decision because the real world driving was very, very good. Back on the mountain, of course, the fourth time that you've conquered the mountain. How does this one rank compared to the others? It's been a journey across 20 years, obviously 2000, 2009, and then 2011 as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's a bit like trying to pick your favourite child, isn't it? I mean, it's a hard question to answer because they're all special, and they're all special for very different reasons. So this one has, this one's going to take a little while to sink in, given, 2020 being such an unusual year with what has been going on around the place. And, you know, Holden's, like we talked about, Holden's last involvement. So to win the races in the factory Holden car, you know, driving with, you know, winning it 20 years after my first one. I even forgot that it was 20 years after my first victory until someone reminded me in the week leading up to the race. So a lot of storylines attached to this race, a lot of emotion involved. So I really enjoyed this one. I was just sort of reflecting on the race today. That race was probably the most seamless race from an execution point of view that I've been involved in from a team perspective. Just everything worked. You know, you write a plan. It's a bit like, you know, it doesn't matter if it's football or business or car racing. You always write a plan and you have to sort of react when things don't quite go to that plan. And, geez, we didn't have to react much. The plan was pretty flawless and we managed to execute it pretty much 100%.
The plan didn't go well, though, for the rest of the team, did it? Because Jamie Wincup got it pretty bad, mate, and he went cannoning into the fence.
You don't normally see that.
I'm sure that would have gone around the garage a bit, wouldn't it, mate?
Yeah, I mean, what that shows everyone is that Bathurst can bite anyone. I mean, Jamie's a four-time Bathurst winner, a seven-time champion of supercars, and, you know, Bathurst can still bite you. So I've always thought this, that you have to treat Bathurst with the utmost respect because it can bite you at any stage. And, yeah, certainly for the team, it was a bittersweet day. So, you know, obviously outside of the garage having success and Jamie and Craig's side of the garage, you know, being out very early, lap 30-odd. So, yeah, look, you don't really think about that sort of stuff when you're in the race. You're just concentrating on your own car and your own performance. And when you sit back and you think, geez, you know, it can bite anyone, can't it? So, yeah, look, up and down day for the team. But, you know, everyone will move forward from that with Jamie's car and forget about that and move forward pretty quickly.
How are you in the closing stages yesterday? What are you like watching on? Are you riding every corner, or are you able to try and relax as much as you can, I guess? There was a couple of safety cars which bunched everyone up and made it for a pretty tight finish.
Yeah, I was fine until those safety cars came, because Shane had done an awesome job managing the car, managing the gap back to Cam Waters, who was second behind him for the last 60-odd laps. And he was just starting to build a bit of a buffer. I think he had the buffer out to about 3 seconds, which is, you know, a pretty comfortable buffer to have. And then when the safety car came with 10 to go, or 9 to go, I think the first one came, and then the second one came with about 4 to go. Yeah, I was just like, oh, we don't need this. We'll just get it over and done with. So, you know, having had a full-time career for 20-odd years, I've always been in the car at the end of the race. And it takes, I've got to tell you, the only thing I don't enjoy about the co-driver role is not being in control of the car at the end of the race. So that's taking a bit of getting used to. But Shane did an awesome job. He managed those safety car restarts to perfection, pulled a gap each time, and then went on to set the fastest lap of the race on the second last lap of the race. So that just shows you how much in the zone he was. So really, we didn't have too much to be worried about.
You are one of many that has won this race, but only six drivers have won more Bathurst titles than you. Do you still have any burning desire to get back in a car full time? And what does the future hold, given that Holden now are going to be still racing, but not under the Holden banner? I think Camaros are going to be lining up against the Mustangs next year. That's the plan?
No, so Camaro will come in 22. So the right. Commodores will still race next year. So the exact cars that you saw yesterday at Bathurst, that shape car, the ZB Commodore, will still race next year, but there will clearly be no Holden involvement. And then in 2022, there's a rules transition, a technical rule transition, where the cars will be a different specification, and that's when Camaro comes in as the Chevrolet Camaro versus the Ford Mustang. So, yeah, look, I don't really have... I mean, my time as a full-time driver is done. I always said when I was racing, if I got to the north side of 40 as a full-time career, then I've had a pretty good run, considering I started when I was 21. So, you know, I'm done with that. I'm really enjoying the co-driver role. I've got I'm in a great team and a great environment there, and I don't want to lose that. And, you know, I've got a few other bits and pieces away from racing. So, you know, move into the next phase of your life. But the new thing with Camaro coming at 22, that might be a bit of motivation to hang around until at least that gets going and maybe have a go on one of those.
Can I just get your further thoughts, Garth, on the fact that there isn't going to be any Holden branding in the supercars next year and what that means for motorsport in Australia?
Oh, look, it's incredibly sad, isn't it? I mean, if you're a motorsport fan, you grew up with a Ford family or a Holden family. So, you know, Ford have sort of always come and gone as far as their official motorsport involvement, but there was always a Ford racing. Whereas this is, you know, now Holden, they're gone. That brand is gone. You won't even see the showrooms next year. It's really sad because the Holden supporters and the Holden fans are so passionate. And, you know, Bathurst particularly and Holden are so intrinsically linked, you know, through the story of Brock and then, you know, Mark Scaife and Craig Lowndes and all those guys that have created so much history at Bathurst with Holden. You know, that's not going to be there. So it's a shame. It is good that there'll be a GM product, if you like, a Chevrolet product there in the future. But it's not the Holden badge. And, you know, we all know how parochial Australians are. So, it's a transition period. I certainly hope that all the Holden fans stay and, you know, continue to support the sport because, you know, we're really appreciative of the Holden fans. And that's why yesterday was so special to be able to deliver that final victory for them.
Holden ambassador, eh? Garth Tander. Did you ever come to the... Because, mate, I've always been a Ford man. Had you ever been enticed to the other side, to the dark side?
Actually, mate, I grew up in a Ford family. My old man was a Ford fan. But you don't get much choice when they say, yeah, do you want a job? It's in a Commodore. You don't really answer and say, oh, well, I'm a Ford man, so I'm not going to drive it. Look, I had a few chats with a few Ford teams throughout my career to go and drive in a Ford team. And that was not so much just because it was a Ford. It was just the teams that we were talking to at the time. So there was no real master strategy for me to sort of be a one-make driver, if you like. It's a bit like footy parlance. We were a one-club player. There was no real master strategy behind that for me. It's just the way it played out. So, you know, that's something that'll be very special that I'll look back on, you know, in years to come that, you know, my full, you know, the time that Holden was involved in the sport while I was there, I drove for them the whole time. So that's something that's pretty special.
Yeah, it should be too, mate. Awesome. Should be very proud of yourself. Thank you very much for joining us tonight here on the program, mate. Take care, and I'm sure we'll have a chat to you again in the future. Good on you.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Garth Tander for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. Top of the mountain yesterday with Shane Van Gisbergen at the Bathurst 1000. And not quite climbing the mountain was our West Coast Fever. We'll have a chat to their captain, Courtney Bruce. Welcome back to Sports Day. News headlines for car sales. Car sales, number one for cars. I was hoping that it was going to be a better day for our West Coast Fever, winning their first Super Netball Championship in their club's history. But sadly, in what was a brilliant game, which started yesterday morning on Nine, was on the wrong side of the ledger for us. But Courtney Bruce, the skipper, has joined us anyway. Courtney, well done on a great game. Sorry that you weren't able to win, but it was a really good game of netball and it went right down to the wire.
Oh, thanks, guys. I feel like it was just a great battle out there. You know, you want grand finals to be like that and it produced many highs and lots of momentum swings. It was a great game to be out there and play. But, yeah, unfortunate it didn't fall our way in the end.
How's the team, Courtney, today, reflecting on everything? Obviously, it's such a tough thing to lose in such tight circumstances. But overall, I mean, you've been away for such a long time. It's been an incredible effort just to get to the grand final.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a bit unfortunate. The girls are on a bus at 7 a.m. to head home today. So we actually haven't spent that much time together. But, yeah, I guess just as captain and part of the club, just super proud. The way that everyone's handled themselves. There's been lots of highs and lows thrown at us living in a hub and being away from our family and friends for so long. But, we've just got such a mature group that, yeah, just really put their best foot forward and looked after each other, and we became a real family over here.
Talk us through the game yesterday a little bit more. You had to come from behind a couple of times. It looked like you had the momentum late on in that final quarter. How do you analyse it all?
Yeah, momentum's a funny one. It definitely swung for the four quarters. And, yeah, it just came down to a few moments. And I guess the Vixens just played those moments out better than we did. And that's a credit to them, high-pressure situation. And they rode those waves better. But, yeah, honestly, it was just a great battle out there. Dixon put their best foot forward. They were playing for a lot. And, yeah, their performance was incredible.
It was incredible by both teams, really, given the number of errors, particularly when it came to the first half, where sometimes you can be a little bit nervous and it can be quite tense and you see a fair bit of turnover. But both teams were just playing with such high quality. I mean, the passing was outstanding.
Yeah, it was definitely hard to defend, that's for sure. I think it was a real battle between the shooting ends, between Vixens and us. And yeah, I think that's what you want, I guess, in a final. It's proving that we were the two best informed teams going into the finals. And yeah, we're putting some fantastic quality of netball out there. I wish a few more turnovers could have fallen our way for us defenders so we could have punished on the scoreboard. But we live and we learn.
Now, I've got to ask your professional opinion now that you have had some time to probably let this sink in and settle in your game. Do you like the two-point opportunity to score in your game in those last 5 minutes of the quarters?
I've had the mindset all season that it does fundamentally change the way you defend the game. So it's probably been a bit of a steep learning curve for our defensive end and I guess the rest of the league. I don't know if I have an opinion either way, to be honest. I think we play a one-point brand netball anyway. Janil is able to put up 60 goals a game and Alice and Kaylee can shoot the twos if we need be. But, yeah, I guess for us, we've stuck to that one-point netball more than anything. But, yeah, it makes it harder as a defender, but I like a challenge.
You certainly do. There's been a few people suggesting that the two-point shot should be adopted throughout the whole game, not just the last 5 minutes in patches through the match. Any further thoughts on that?
Oh, no, thank you. That would make my life a lot harder. But whatever the league decides, the league decides.
I thought that might be the case. Janil Fowler, you mentioned she was awesome again yesterday.
Yeah, she's just an absolute gun. At times, she was double defended on for nearly 50 minutes of the game, and she just took balls with two defenders on her and just her strength to manage to take the hits that she did. So, yeah, I thought she was phenomenal again and stepped up when we needed to.
Now, you're home after 84 days away. Did you or have you noticed anything different back here in Western Australia? I'm just looking at a picture of... I think it looks like Janil Fowler coming through the airport.
Oh, well, I'm not actually home yet, Jess. Myself and Stacey had Diamonds Camp up in Noosa. So we've still got a bit of time here in Queensland and we'll head home next Tuesday. But I'll let you know next week how it's all going.
Yeah, well, sounds good. We'd like to have a chat to you after Diamonds Camp. So with your new coach of the Diamonds being your current coach, you would know and understand the way that she likes to play and the systems that she has introduced into your team. I'm assuming those similar systems are going to be something that she will introduce at a national level.
I hope so. Obviously, all three of us girls know her really, really well. I think it's going to be exciting, though, and we'll get to see a bit of insight to how she wants to run the national program in this coming week. It's more of a fun camp than a performance camp and setting, I guess, the tone of how she'll run the program. So I feel like she'll bring her real personable nature, really knowing her players on and off the court and just make it enjoyable, which is something that we really need in the Diamonds environment.
Will you get a chance to have a break once you get back to WA?
Definitely. I'm not sure when we're due back, but we'll quarantine and then, just enjoy some Perth summer. I haven't had a summer in Perth in a while, so it should be good.
And what rules are you expecting when you do return home to Perth, Courtney? Are you allowed to quarantine at your place of residence? I think you are, aren't you?
Yeah, we've been super lucky in the WA government and the police have been really helpful in allowing us to isolate at home. So I was lucky. I brought a house just before COVID hit, so I'll actually be spending some quality time in my house finally, so that'll be exciting.
Good stuff. Well, thank you very much for sharing some time with us again tonight and thanks for your interaction throughout the course of the season. It's been wonderful. Well done on your leadership and good luck for the future. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Courtney Bruce, captain of our West Coast Fever, and what an awesome game it was, Paps. Had me glued to the lounge. It was good entertainment yesterday had that and the supercars going on all afternoon.
I was up out of my chair. I wasn't glued to the lounge. How exciting it was, particularly towards the end. Obviously disappointing for our Fever, but a great season. And credit to Courtney Bruce as well. Always happy to take our phone call on Sports Day, and very, very good of her to front up, you know, the day after a grand final loss.
All thanks to Car Sales at Car Sales, every minute on Car Sales. We will come back with a bloke who will be, I think anyway, turning professional in the not-too-distant future. We'll find out when amateur Hayden Hopewell, who won the WA Golf Open yesterday, will join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day. Flying under the radar, as of last week, radar detectors attract significant penalties. And I'm not sure that this bloke is now flying under the radar. He is a West Australian amateur golfer. His name is Hayden Hopewell, and he has won the WA Golf Open, which was played at the Royal Fremantle Golf Club from Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And he joins us here on the program. Welcome, Hayden. Congratulations.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Yeah, thanks a lot. It was a huge day, and thanks for having me.
Just tell us about yourself, mate, where you've grown up, where you've plied your craft, and when you got infatuated with the game of golf.
Yeah, so I started at a very young age down in Capel Golf Club, down in Bunbury. So we lived down there. I started at around 3 or 4, so it was a very young age, and my dad, he was a keen golfer, so he sparked the light for me.
Fantastic. So growing up down that way, and you've obviously progressed on the Capel Golf Club. That's the one just off the highway, isn't it, there you drive past?
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's a nice little course, really good greens, not a lot of traffic, but just a nice course all around.
And you've obviously, you said your dad loved the game of golf. It sparked your interest at the age of 3 or 4, and you've set yourself from there.
Yeah, he's off a scratch handicap, but we played a lot of golf after school, all through my junior days, 9 holes every day religiously, and practiced a lot. And then after Capel, my golf started to get a little bit better, around the age of sort of 12, 13. And at the time, I was playing AFL and Little Athletics, so that Those two sports come to a halt because my golf was getting a bit more serious. So we moved up to Perth, and we did the Golf WA Tour up here for a long time.
Part of the WA Men's State Team for the last 3 years, from 2018, Australian World Junior Team 2019 in Japan. Sadly, movement internationally has been drastically reduced. And, of course, you were the top qualifier for the Australian Open in 2019. You played in that Open. You finished 27th. What was the experience like?
Oh, that was surreal. Just walking into the Australian Golf Club for the first time to get into the practice round was just an amazing feeling, like just seeing the course in immaculate condition and just the vibes around the clubhouse, seeing a lot of top pros, Paul Casey, Garcia, Louis Oosthuizen. It was just a great feel initially when I walked in.
And you would be disappointed by the recent announcement by Golf Australia that you won't be able to do that in 2020, which I'm not happy about, to be totally honest, mate. I am uncomfortable with us not having the PGA Championship, the Australian Open and the Women's Australian Open. I felt that they still could have been played in Australia at a really nice golf course, and it could have been contested with blokes like yourself and the best that we have here in Australia. Are you disappointed that not getting the opportunity?
Yeah, it is a disappointing bit of outcome, but it is a very hard time for everyone all around the world. And I guess if they could try and put it into WA or a state that's kind of COVID-free, but it'd just be hard for the other players internationally to travel to the event. It would have been very nice if I got an invite, or if I had to pre-queue. It would have been a great experience to give that shot.
I suppose, look, without the internationals, and I that's the excuse that they've given, is because of COVID-19. But I still felt that we could have gone ahead. I mean, why wouldn't we still have an Australian Open with the best Australian players, of which many are just shacked up and going to be shacked up for months, probably months longer than they would like now?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's definitely a little bit disappointing, but I guess the big sort of how they roll in the big sponsors for their event is the big international players. But they could host it just an Australian Open, but it just I feel like it just wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same feels.
Hayden, we're obviously chatting to you after your victory yesterday. You know Royal Fremantle really, really well. Take us back to yesterday. You started the day two shots back of the leader, but you were really able to storm home.
Yeah, it was an awesome day. I got out the box a little slower than I'd liked, bogeying the first and then making a couple par saves, just sort of getting comfortable into my round, and then hit a few good drives, like 4, 5, and 6. Managed to make a birdie on 6, and then unfortunately nearly drove the green. Or fortunately, I drove the green, nearly drove the green on 9, and then unfortunately hit a bad chip and ended up making bogey on 9 for 1 over through the turn. And then I just thought I just need to go for it. Like holes are closing out. There's only 9 left, and I thought I just had to full send it, and it paid off.
And talk us through the 23-foot putt on the 17th.
Yeah, so ended up just before that 17th hole, I birdied the 14th hole to get it to stay at 2 behind, because Baz, he birdied it as well, and then I rolled in a nice 8-foot putt on the 15th to get within 1 of the lead with 3 to play, and then hit a good drive up 16, good approach shot, managed to hit it close there and hole a nice 5-footer for birdie to be all square with 2 to play. And then we get to the 17th hole. Down breeze, no one's been able to hold the green all week because it's just been rock hard greens and super, super fast. And it's been downwind. It's played about 150 metres on the last day. The shorts have played all week. And I hit a nice 16 wedge just right of the pin, landed about 23 feet, had a right to left putt down the hill and managed to hold that putt in a very clutch moment and a huge, huge time in the match to take a one-shot lead up the last.
Now, you're 18. You have joined amateurs Zach Murray in 2018. He won the tournament. He's turned professional. Curtis Luck in 2016. He's turned professional, yep. But he's stepped away, I think, since. You've got Ollie Goss in 2012. And then you go right back to Stephen Leaney in 1991. And Terry Gale, a bloke who won it in 1975. Are you going to turn professional in the not-too-distant future? What's your plan?
It's definitely COVID's thrown that out a little bit. I'd say it's delayed from anywhere from 8 to 12 months, but nothing changes too much for me. Just gonna practice and then hopefully work out some sort of schedule for the next couple of years, and hopefully get the chance to play in the Asia Pacific and the USAM before I turn pro, which is probably a year and a half to 2 years away. So I've got a bit of a mind frame. That there's no hurry to turn pro. You want to know you're ready, and you want to know that time when you're playing well and you know you can compete with the pros and get out on tour and start winning at the gate.
You beat another amateur by the name of Hayden Barron. Do you know him very well?
Yeah, he's a good mate of mine. We practice together, obviously state team together. I'm actually gymming it with him in the next hour, so we see each other at least 2 or 3 times a week, so we're good
stuff. No, that's nice, mate. Well done. Congratulations. Thank you very much for telling us a bit about yourself, and we hope to see you doing bigger and better things in the not-too-distant future, mate. What happens from here, given the announcement about those national events? Will there be some golfing events ahead of you? Do you know yet?
No, that's the big question. For everyone, like I don't know what's going on, so I guess I just gotta knuckle down, maybe take this time to work out a few things in my game that might need improving, and I'm sure there is. It's just a good time to practice, I guess, and just wait until there's a schedule.
Take care, mate. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hayden Hopewell, winner of the WA Golf Open on the weekend down there at Royal Fremantle. Nice young bloke. And as of last week, radar detectors were illegal and penalties apply. It's the end of the road for radar detectors. We'll finish off with player of the round. We'll tell you what happened on this day next here on... Welcome back to Sports Day. And speaking of the Kia Sorento, which has landed, Kia's top seven out of the weekend. At number seven, the performance of Very Elegant, ridden by Mark Zara, winning the Caulfield Cup. Be interesting to see whether she goes on during the spring campaign. At number six, WA amateur Hayden Hopewell for winning the WA Golf Open by a stroke. The amateurs were certainly very impressive in that tournament played down there at Royal Fremantle. At number five, Dustin Martin. He was absolutely awesome in Richmond's dramatic win over Port Adelaide to advance to the 2020 Grand Final there on Friday night, booting a couple of very, very important goals. At number four, a match that I loved watching yesterday afternoon. Sadly, it wasn't our West Coast Fever victorious, but you have to admire the Melbourne Vixens winning what was a super netball grand final to behold by a couple of shots in the end. It was a really good morning of entertainment. At number three, Kerrin McAvoy riding Classique Legend to victory in the richest race in Australia, the Everest at Randwick. It was a commanding victory. Unbelievable, actually. So Classique Legend really making a statement in that race. At number two, some more entertainment yesterday afternoon. A great race. Shane Van Gisbergen and Garth Tander winning the Bathurst 1000, which is a real test of endurance. Well done to Shane and Garth Tander, who, of course, is a WA boy. And at number one, it has to be Lachie Neale. Acknowledgement for a sensational season in the AFL. He had it locked up a long way from home, winning the Brownlow medal as expected. So well done to Lachie Neale for the all-new game-changing Kia Sorento, which has landed. You can find out more at kia.com.au. And for the player of the round for expert car service you can rely on, you visit repcoservice.com. It's Mitch Duncan for me. He always goes under the radar. I think it's easy to pick out goal scorers like Ablett and Rowan and, of course, Hawkins. But, mate, he was integral to getting the job done for the Cats. 9 score involvements from his 22 disposals whilst not getting on the scoreboard himself. He was so instrumental in setting them up for his teammates. So well done to Mitch Duncan, another WA boy, and good luck in the AFL Grand Final on Saturday. For expert car servicing you can rely on, Repco authorised service. You can find your local centre at repcosurface.com. And on this day for Barra and O'Day, because the little things are everything, on this day in 1986, Australian Alan Border scored the 1,000,000th run in all test cricket. There's a stat for you. And on this day in 1974, Yvonne Goolagong won her first WTA Tour Championship, defeating Chris Evert in Los Angeles. It's the birthday of Evander Holyfield today, born in Atlanta, Georgia. He's 58 today, US boxer. He's the only heavyweight to win the WBA title on 4 separate occasions. In 1997, he retained his title against the great Mike Tyson when Tyson was suspended after twice biting Holyfield's ear. And in 1998, he retained his IBF heavyweight title when he defeated Vaughn Bean. He has 11 children. He's been busy, hasn't he? With 6 different women. Also on this day, Mark Occhialupo on the Gold Coast was declared the world surfing champion in 1999. And this probably doesn't really relate much to sport, but I had to throw it in. The world's longest line of firecrackers was detonated in Spain in 2002, measuring 11 kilometres. That would have been a hell of a firecracker, wouldn't it? That one. Barra and O'Day, don't miss out the little moments because the little things are everything. And we'll be back tomorrow from 6 o'clock for another edition of Sports Day. We'll see you then.